I am so excited that for 2024, Your Brand Amplified is proudly sponsored by one of my favorite platforms, Simplified. This AI-driven platform is a game changer for design and video content. With Simplified, I can effortlessly transform lengthy videos, such as my podcast, into engaging, shareable clips and streamline workflows with an intuitive subtitle generator. For designers out there, you can explore the AI-powered image generator, create compelling presentations, and design eye-catching YouTube thumbnails with ease. Revolutionize your creative process at simplify.com with a free trial. Now let's dive into today's guest.
Welcome to Your Brand Amplified, the podcast where we interview marketers, publicists, and brands to learn their stories, what makes them tick, and tips and tricks that make a difference.
This morning, I have the pleasure of interviewing Lance Psycho. You heard me correctly. We're definitely going to talk about that a little bit, but somebody who is truly a man after my own heart. You are a serial entrepreneur, you're a professor, you're invested in the nonprofit community, and you really invested in the future of work and the future workforce from what I'm gleaning from our conversation before we jumped on and from reading through some of your material and your podcast host. So thank you for being here.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Anita. This is great.
I am also a serial entrepreneur, podcast host, a professor, have started nonprofits. So I'm really interested in how you became the Lance Psycho who is you today. What prompted you? Because you started out as an architect. Is that something you always knew you wanted to go into? Did you know you were going to be an entrepreneur? What was that journey like?
Oh, yeah, sure. My journey starts way back when I was like 13 years old and then sort of coming of age story, right? So I grew up in Northwest North Dakota and grew up in a lower middle class family. And I'm just a natural contrarian. And so contrary to my mother and father, who did a great job raising us, we have a traditional childhood. It was a beautiful childhood. I'm not trying to poo-poo them at all or anything like that. But I do recognize the reality I was in, and that was pretty low middle class, you know, to the end where like once there was a $1,000 long distance bill that I racked up a fee on when I was like about that age too. And you would have thought we were losing the house. So like that kind of trauma and anxiety with money was a big issue. So I wanted to do the opposite, right? And they both were workers. They weren't entrepreneurs. And so that was really kind of where the catalyst started for me was I wanted freedom from the anxiety of not having money. Kanye West is one of my favorite rappers. And one of the quotes he says that just has stuck with me since forever was, having money isn't everything, but not having it is. Money for me is leverage, is freedom. It's freedom from the anxiety. Once you're done worrying about it and living paycheck to paycheck, for you to get into a flow state as a serial entrepreneur, you can't do it. Like, I'm not sure you can get into a true flow state unless you are free from that. And then you start to expand outward from there. So I did always have, you know, and one of the big things that pushed me into entrepreneurialism was I tried working with my dad one summer when I was 13, mm-hmm. growing up on a sugar beet farm. We tried irrigating these beets and you had to wake up like every couple hours for 24 hours for like several weeks. As a 13-year-old, that's difficult as it is. And it's not so much that I don't like hard work because I'm actually a carpenter at heart. That was my first trade that I picked up. We didn't get along too well. The work wasn't fulfilling. And so after that, for 1 week, I said, hey, I've tried this. This isn't for me. We don't get along. He goes, well, you got to do something. You know, I'm here to raise children with, you know, the typical strong Protestant work ethic and all of that. And so I called his best friend, Bruce, up, who was a general contractor. And I said, hey, Bruce, I've always wanted to build stuff. I've always been a drawer, building with Legos. Carpentry interests me. You have any openings? And he said, yeah, you can be my gopher. And I got really excited. And he laughed. And I go, what's a gopher? And he goes, well, you go for this and you go for that. And when you're done going, yeah, you're laughing. You got the joke. And so he said, once you're done doing that, you can come up on the roof and learn how to roof with us. And I just love the work. I love the camaraderie. It was like very super hard work. We were still waking up super early, but it was much more regimented. I just really enjoyed all of that as a young guy. And about halfway through the summer, one of the things Bruce said to me that changed my life forever was he turned to me and he goes, hey, man, I'm paying you $7.25 an hour. What do you think I'm charging the owners for your labor? And I go, $7.25 an hour. And he laughed again. And he goes, no, that's not the way it works. He goes, I charge them you know, 3 to 4 times what I'm paying you. And I go, oh, why do you do that? He explained profit. He explained overhead. He explained importance of profit. And that's the lifeblood of the company, especially you have a downturn where you're trying to expand it. You know, all that stuff that we know as entrepreneurs and take for granted, sort of. And then I saw the lack of anxiety that Bruce had about money. There was no trauma involved with money with him, right? He was certainly not this super wealthy dude, but there was just, to not have that anxiety was like everything to me. I go, oh, I should just be Bruce. So then every single summer after that, up until I was 21, I would go work for a different contractor and learn a different trade. I went to trade school for 2 years. I was actually a carpenter first. Wow. And then after I got my carpentry degree, or building construction technology degree, again, like this sort of this curious low-level autist mind where I'm like, I need the truth. I'm always looking for the truth. Right. And I got to looking, our capstone project in our building construction tech degree was we had to build a house. And first time I got to see blueprints, like real old school blueprints, actually. I was like, well, why do the architects make these decisions? Like, where is this coming from, right? And then the entrepreneur layer on top of that was, like the blueprints come first, the design comes first. Imagine how powerful I could be as an entrepreneur if I became the architect and I already know how to build stuff. And then I became a builder. And so I applied to North Dakota State University, got in. I actually had to take some remedial math courses because I wasn't that good of a student in college. In high school leading up to that. Ended up graduating at the top of my class, number one, won the Peter F. McKenzie Award. And then that's what led me to be an entrepreneur. And after I got a taste of it, it's just been everything for me. Like, I love building companies, even if they're nonprofits too, you know, like the garden. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a creative. And so like that is part of the creative process for me, is like building the companies, the challenges. It's just super exciting. That's when I'm in my flow state.
Yeah. There's so many things there that I resonate with. I grew up in Kansas. My mom was a school social worker. My dad was a college professor, but at a community college. And my stepdad was a butcher at Safeway. No. So he grew up on a farm, hard work, that work ethic, but also not having tons of money, right? And they were not entrepreneurs, but there were other entrepreneurs in my family. And from a young age, I think I thought, oh, entrepreneurship, what does that really mean? What does it mean to be successful? I saw so many failures, because that's part of the entrepreneurship journey, right? Is you have to learn, and it's, you might take a step back, but everything that you learn in that will help put you in a better position with your next company or your next idea, your next nonprofit, whatever it is. So I love the fact that you've just shared this journey with us. I really appreciate that. And also flagging that it was your curious mind, this need to be in a flow state. But I do have a question, because people who are creative, right? Yeah. Often there's a little bit of a disconnect. Like, I always have a lot of ideas, but I need strong financial people to work with to make sure that I'm being realistic about how much can I put into payroll? How much can I afford to do for XYZ part of the company or grow? So how do you marry that want and need to be entrepreneurial, be in a flow state creatively, but then also make sure that you don't have this worry about money?
Well, I think you have to set a basis for yourself about what it means to have money, to collect the money, to not overspend it and everything. And I think it starts with a simple budget, right? Like a personal budget, right? And then you can start with a business budget after that. I wonder if like what you're really trying to pull out of me is, and maybe I'm wrong here, but is like, well, for the creative people, like that doesn't mean they're this sort of number cruncher.
Right.
And how do you square that whole thing? Yes. Right. So I think this would be my advice for any creative person out there that is sort of like us, right? Where they're like, yeah, the creativity and the flow state, and like that's life. Like that's being, right? I mean, that's like, I am literally real life meditating, right? That's like very Taoist. I am being, I'm being, I'm being, I'm being. And that is, you got to learn how to embrace the suck. You just have to. Like, if you want to actually free yourself so that you can be in those creative flow states and be the most happy, because that is when you're most happy as a person. Doesn't matter what you're doing, right? Yeah. And so that is like, okay, creative person who's listening to this show, understand, you have to understand numbers, right? You have to understand how the business model is going to work, profitability, and just know that like that's part of your flow state is like, I am accepting this part that I don't want to do. And then when you finally get to the point where you have that financial freedom a little bit, where you're not so worried about paycheck to paycheck, even as a business owner, I mean, we starved for those first 3 years, is like, when you can recognize you're at that freedom. I had a young guy reach out to me last year and he's a lifelong friend, and he's a little bit younger than me, and he started this app, and it's a really brilliant app, actually. And he's like, it's so good. It seems like it's so good. The people I've hired, I spent like $200,000 developing this software app with, they want to buy it from me. And I go, okay. And he goes, but I know that that's probably a short-term return, right? Like, he's like, if I held on to it and I didn't sell my portion of the shares and all of that, obviously, and then it's successful, like, this could set me free financially for the rest of my life, type of thing. Like, the multiplier is way bigger, right? Risk versus reward and the time and all of that. And his big fear was exactly what we're talking about. He goes, like, I don't know how to do accounting or anything, like, or I don't know how to read the contracts with, you know, as from a lawyer's perspective. And I go, his name is Donnie. I said, Donnie, do you think I know how to do all that stuff? He goes, well, certainly looks like it. And I go, good, then I fooled you, because I don't. And that's like the thing is, like, let's recognize and be emotionally mature enough to go, yep, I can't do that. And I don't like doing that.
Right.
Great. Do I have the means to farm that out and delegate that? That's where you start leveling up.
Yeah. And that's such a good point, too. I love that you're talking about being in flow state, because that is something else we have to really recognize, is that if you're not doing the work that really makes you sing, to me, that's not living. And I've gone back and forth in my entrepreneurship journey into working in companies, working for myself. And even though working for myself might, to your point, might have a little bit more risk financially and you have to build up, there's also the freedom to do what I really love to do. Where if sometimes I found myself in positions where I'm like, oh, this is not my sweet spot. I can do this work, but it's not going to be the best work I can do for this company or for me. So how did you realize how to get into your flow state? Because thinking, you know, you're from North Dakota, you didn't necessarily grow up as somebody who I would think of, or who most people would think of, would be a Zen philosopher while also an architect, right?
Yeah. So there's like a couple of themes. Like, this is one of my themes for this year is flow state. I just read a book, it's called Drive. And it talks a lot about that. And it's sort of pitches, like, there's type E people and there's type I people. And the I people are, it's intuitive, it's more creative and stuff like that. And they need their reward, actually. And like, when they're most productive is flow state. Versus there are some people who actually, they just want to be workers. They want to go do their 40 hours and they want to get their paycheck. We need both people to exist.
Right.
And all that kind of stuff. Right. So what I'm trying to get at with that, as citing that book, is that I tell my business partner all the time, I'm like, after I read Meditations, for example, I'm really not trying to toot my own horn here in this kind of way, but like, I just try to have that kind of a perspective of like a holistic 40-year perspective, right? If I'm 40 years old. And I go, man, it seems like these books, this is just a recent revelation too. I go, it seems like all of these books that you and I read, right? Because it's stuff like that, the Drive book, Meditations, like a much more like philosophical, or like even like the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. That kind of book, right? Is I say, I'll get to the end of the book and I'll go, Al's like, how was the book? And I go, it was great. It honestly just kind of reemphasized all the stuff that I'm already doing. And I go, and he goes, well, yeah, you're successful. We're successful. And I go, but what the authors do that I hadn't done, and I haven't still done until I've read the book, is I go, those authors formulated it into words, right? They condensed the whole thing. So then I could talk about things like the law of polarity or the flow state and stuff like that. So after reading about all that, like, how do you know and then stay in the flow state? I think you have to recognize when you're in it, first of all. And the very big first clue is temporal for anybody, right? Let's say you're really into sewing. If you start a sewing project, and maybe it's just a hobby for now, right? But you start the project at 8 a.m. and you're like, okay, I only have an hour to do it. But the next time you look up is it's 10 a.m. Great, you were in a flow state. Right? Because the time got away from you in that sort of way. So I think that's the biggest clue that I could suggest to the audience is like, when you're in a flow state, when you basically lose track of time for a good reason, right? And then how do you maintain staying in that flow state, right? So if you're trying to turn it into a business, you do have to recognize that reality again. It goes like, how do I monetize this? And let's say you have your standard 9-to-5 job, but you're like, man, I just wish I was sewing every day. I wish I was just sewing for 8 hours every day, because I would be in my flow state and I would be super happy. I could make my own time. You got to figure out how to carve your time for that. And you might have to make a little bit of sacrifices for it, right? Mm-hmm. So I talk about a lot when I go on shows such as yours, Anika, about the golden hours in the morning. my routine in the morning is wake up, big glass of water, stretch, rosary for other people, that could be meditation, coffee. And by the time I'm done with the coffee, it's usually about like 5:30, 6 a.m.
Oh, wow.
And I am then, before actually everybody else gets to work and all the other emails start flying in, those are the golden hours. So if you're trying to expand and carve out like that new niche for yourself, or like move into some kind of other creative endeavor that hopefully you can monetize and then be that entrepreneur, those golden hours are so, so critical for you to do that. And that's usually when the flow state can really happen, because it's so quiet and you're concentrating on that creative thing.
I like that. And you also mentioned the law of polarity, which we talked about before we jumped on, but I'd love for you to talk to our audience about what that means to you and how that connects to the American dream today.
Yeah. This is, again, so we're one of those things, like I did the most interviews, public interviews like this last year. I just felt compelled to do it. And what it did is that exercise is like, I would get questions like this and it would start to pull out of me things that like that were sort of subconscious. And then I would start to explain them. And so I was telling this story just recently, like in the last couple interviews that I did. And actually, I was interviewing somebody on our show when this happened. And I was explaining to the gal, I was at a dinner with my children, maybe, you know, 2 or 3 months prior to that. And I said, we were sitting there and I looked at them and I was kind of quiet and I go, hey, what do you guys think gets your dad most excited? And they go, I don't know. You know, they don't know their kids. And I go, when negative stuff happens. And they're like, what? I was like, yeah, when something bad happens to me or my company, I actually get like really excited. And they're like, what? And I go, because something positive is going to happen afterwards. I go, it has to. I go, do you guys really think that electricity could exist if there wasn't, you know, a positive and a negative? Like, could the world exist, arguably, if there wasn't like a night and a day, right? We need like black and white to make things work. Like, there's all these positives and negatives, these opposites that make our world work. So it's balanced, right? Males and females, all that kind of stuff. And so then jumping to this interview where I was interviewing this gal, and she goes, oh, you're describing the law of polarity. See, again, sort of this author, like, formulating it for me. So now I can kind of express it in a very much more concise way of like, that stuff is real. I mean, I just look back at like, it took me 40 years to get there. And that's probably like life experience, just needing that to happen. But almost every single time something negative happens to me, there's a positive thing that comes up out at the end. When I actually get nervous is when it's just positive, 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 positive. And I'm like, when is the floor going to drop out? It's sort of like, I know almost everybody's probably experienced this, where they're like, this is going too well. This seems too easy. Like, this part seems too easy. Yeah. It might. Because like the negative thing hasn't come out yet. So you got to watch out for it, be prepared for it. That's stoicism, right? Of recognizing like, it's not all going to be positive. It's not all going to be negative. Where am I at on the chessboard? So when it comes to sort of how that plays into how I try to live my life and how I hope that others try to live their life is kind of relating to, there's a victimhood mentality in the United States. Maybe it's all in the Western world. I don't know about that, where it's like, I was born into this environment, therefore I can never get out of it. Or like, the world is against me. And it's like, there's some truth to that, because I was born into that way, right? Like, rural Northwest or North Dakota, you already kind of mentioned it. And like, that's not where like a person who talks about Zen-like living comes from, you would think, right? It's probably Eastern stuff, who knows? And I go, okay, yeah, I was born into, let's say, my counterparts, right, that I went to school with at North Dakota State. A lot of them were from like Minneapolis and upper middle class families. And they even went to bigger schools, right? Because I graduated with the class of 20. They met a graduate with the class of 350.
Right.
They could take like college level courses in high school. They had a head start. And it was like, okay, those people were dealt almost a royal flush if we're playing poker. Inarguably, right? It was easier for them to get wins. I was still dealt a hand of cards. It was just a really crappy hand of cards. So what I had to do, or like other people like me, when you're in that position, you're still playing the game. Like, you really got to remind yourself, like, I am still playing the game. I just got to play my cards much more smartly,
right,
and correct. And like, I got to be better with my cards. And if I do that and I get to the same amount of wins as them, you probably actually, because you're flexing a different kind of mental muscle the whole time compared to the other person who had it easier. Yeah. You're probably actually even in a better position for them, right? back to the law of polarity. Thank God that negative stuff happened to me. Thank God I was dealt that negative hand of cards, right? And the same thing happens with, like, I like to make the analogy about chess. So we're all playing the chess game, right? You hear this all often, like, people are like, well, we're just pawns in the game. Good. What happens when the pawn gets all the way to the other side of the board? That pawn can become a queen. Well, that pawn can become the most powerful chess piece in the chess game.
Yeah. That's a pretty big dose of inspiration right there.
Well, I had my coffee this morning, right? I had a pretty good, it relates back to the routine.
Yeah, but I love that. You've covered so many things that people need to think about, especially going into a new year, thinking about how you want to show up for the new year. You know, you mentioned flow state being one of your big mantras or themes for the year. And it's really good for us to talk about the hard stuff, and not just the easy stuff all the time, right? And not just come on the show and talk about all the great things that are happening in our businesses, but talk about those experiences we had that got us to where we are and made us better at what we do now. To that point, you mentioned that it took 3 years of really working hard to get your business off the ground. What was that time like? And then where is your business now?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, those 3 years were hard. And that kind of, like, I give advice often about this where they're like, well, when is the best time to start a business? I go, when it's the hardest. You're going to be the most hungry. It's going to push you to be the most creative person in terms of, like, how I market, how I go get clients. Cool. You're going to be as lean as possible. So I'm so grateful for us literally being able to start with no choice, pretty much, because there was 50% of architects were laid off in 2009, 2010.
Wow.
We had to start our own business. Like, we had no choice. No one was hiring in that. So I just love that we were like this piece of coal that was stuck in the fire, and now we're coming out we're accelerating as a diamond, right? All these analogies, metaphors I'm trying to make. So it was hard, but it pushed us in, like, a really good foundation for us sort of being a lean, mean, creative machine with F9. So about 2010, 2009, and in 2013, the economy started to pick up a little bit in Colorado to the point where we needed to hire somebody.
Yeah.
And it was a little bit our first hire. And we reached out to the University of Colorado Boulder, their architecture department. We got a ton of applicants, and because nobody was hiring again, so we were kind of in a good position for that. But the problem was, most of the candidates that we had interviewed, like, they weren't turnkey. So what I mean by that is, like, they knew how to run a pencil, but really I need architects who can run a mouse too. Like, you got to kind of be both. Like, I need you to, you got to execute the software. Sorry. So we emailed the chair of the department and we said, hey, would love to hire folks from the university. They're local. It makes sense to us. But the problem is that they aren't turnkey. We really need them to learn this software. The software is called Revit Architecture. And we said, is there any way we can, like, help you guys and we can teach them? We weren't really looking for a job per se. Peggy said, yes, but not in the environmental design department. You'll be tangential. The proximity will be there. You'll be a proxy to the department. There's an opening in the engineering department to teach that piece of software, basically. Oh. And we have lots of environmental design students that take that class. So that's we started teaching there. And then that was a supplemental income for us. So that's like one level of expansion we made, and we started to, and was like, well, now we're finding, like, we do still need to hire somebody, because now we're spending this time teaching. And we made our first hire because of that, a sort of a push come to shove thing. And then the last 10 years, so, you know, I know we're recording this early 2024, but the last 10 years from 2013 to 2023 has just been a nice, steady, accelerated growth based on all of those fundamentals that we established after being, you know, these pieces of coal in that hot fire and honing in on sort of being a diamond to culminating in the last year. You know, now we're a seven-figure firm on the architecture side of things. During that period, we started a development firm, F12 Productions, where we designed, built, and developed a triplex and a sixplex. I'm actually sitting in one of the condos that I designed and built for myself. I just came 24 feet away from my office, which is right across the alley there. And then with that, we spun off a construction company, F14 Productions, who now has, including myself, 4 full-time staff. Architecture side is 8 full-time. And it really culminated actually last year, last spring, for the architecture side of things with F9. We won the Best of Mile High Award, which is, it says, thank you. It says, you have the best customer service out of all the architecture firms in the state of Colorado. So it's just so exciting. Like, it just really emphasizes being in that creative flow state. Again, love when the problems come up, And then you know there's going to be some opportunity at the other end.
Right, exactly. What is the meaning behind the name? Because you have F9, F12, F14?
Yep.
Okay.
there is an F10. We designed and built some tiny houses for Subaru. It was an F11, which is Alex's book, Creativity Code. And then there was an F15, which is a Bitcoin mining operation, which worked for a while. So the Fs, what does it mean? The Fs are when we were laid off. So basically, Alex and I graduated in 2008. We got jobs, respectively, separate areas in the country. Obviously, mine was in Boulder, Colorado, because we're in Colorado now. And Al went to New York City and worked for Studio Daniel Liebskin, super prominent architect, world famous, did the first reiteration of the World Trade Center after 9/11. And we both got laid off really quick, right? Because the Great Recession hit. It was sort of the last internships that we could find and all of that. And when we left both firms, our stint was so little there. We didn't have any built work that we could put in our portfolio when we started our firm. All we had were these photorealistic renderings. And the software we were using at the time was 3ds Max. And the hotkey on the keyboard, and everybody still has this hotkey for different reasons and different softwares, is F9. So all we had is F9 Productions.
Okay.
And then we just kind of went from there.
Nice. I love that origin story. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
So then you move from getting laid off to starting your own firm, starting a few other projects along the way, teaching. Now you're the best in the business, best customer service in the whole state of Colorado. You have a podcast. When did the podcast start?
It started in year 7
of
being in existence with F9.
Nice.
So we started in 2017. And the significance of that is a lot of people who are entrepreneurs or entrepreneur adjacent understand the statistic of most businesses or startups fail within that first 7 years.
Yeah.
And we got to year 7. It was like, ooh, we haven't failed yet. Oh my gosh. Okay. All right. We should tell our story to other people. I just really like, for me, so culture's upstream from politics. And I believe, like, if you really want one of the most positive impacts in the world, it's like, you probably skip the voting machine, honestly. Could probably just not do that, not put your time and energy into that. If you're on the culture side of things, and you can do things I've been trying to do on this show right today, is like, be inspirational, be motivational, be positive. Talk about the negative stuff in the positive light. That was really the nexus of why we started the show, is because I just saw my generation and the generation coming up behind me, Gen Z, with that sort of negative victimhood. And by all means, I get it. We had the dot-com boom, then we had the Great Recession, and then when we had COVID and all of that. And like, you see how like millennials, I think per capita compared to boomers, have the least amount of home ownership. You know, there's all those kind of statistics. Like it's very hard, right? Boomers kind of had it easy in a lot of ways in that way. But we wanted to show that light of like, you can still do it. The American dream is still alive. Like, here's some fundamentals. Like, we told pretty much everything about how we did it from scratch. And it's helped so many people. So like, the best, yes, we have sponsors. We get paid to do the show and everything like that. But the real rewards are just like, I will get that email, or I will get that phone call, or I will get that text from a listener. And they're like, hey man, you inspired me to like start my own business. And now I'm doing it, and look at what I'm doing, or whatever. You know, we inspired them to do something positive. So that's where it came from, and that's kind of where it's going. And then at a certain point, I think about 3 or 4 years ago, we just had the original Friday show. And now we have shows like this show, you know, we're doing right now, where I'm interviewing other entrepreneurs who I find interesting, who have had a struggle, you know, went through that fire and come out really positive. I really like hearing that grit.
Oh yeah.
I really like just showing that grit. Because that grit is so important. It makes the best people in the world.
It goes back to what you were saying about the law of polarity. Right? You have to have experienced things to appreciate what you have and to also see your way through to the other side. So, it definitely makes us a lot stronger as humans existing in this world, trying to figure out this thing called life.
Yep.
And when did your foray into your community garden and your nonprofit start as well? How do you manage all this time on top of being a family man?
Yeah, well, so the nonprofit, we already talked about growing up on a sugar beet farm, right? So I grew up in between the sugar beet farm / Durham farm and then a cattle ranch. Very rural, we know where our food comes from. Dad had a garden, grandma had a garden. I spent a lot of time with grandma in her garden. growing food is just important to me. I mean, my background is environmental design as far as architecture goes, right? So when I moved to Colorado and was working, first working for the other firm and then doing our startup at the beginning, was we live in an apartment. So we had no group, we had no gardening opportunities. And I thought it was very important for my children to see where the, how it works. And then, you know, I just feel very strongly about that. And obviously, like, if you're growing your own food, it's probably the healthiest food possible that you could be eating, right? It's almost like so fresh and all of that. So I just looked up, you know, where I live is in Boulder County. It's very progressive in terms of like urban gardening opportunities, even back then. So I just looked up Community Garden, found what was formerly at Growing Gardens, was the original nonprofit, and joined, got a plot, and then kept the plot. And then I think year two or three that I had the plot, and you basically lease it from them. Then I became a garden leader. So I led the garden for, you know, 7 or 8 years.
Oh.
And then at that point, so like in 2000, yeah, it would have been 21, so 3 years ago, Growing Gardens said, hey, we've established enough of these in Boulder County. And meaning like, you know, they got the plots going, they provided the seed money, and they go, we kind of want to relinquish each one of them back to local control. Which I thought was a very mature thing to do. Like, yeah, that's, it's like the delegation part we talked about, right? And so they offered me first dibs on that, and they go,
nice.
And they said, would you want to kind of take over? And I go, it's a lifelong dream to have a nonprofit. Like, I used to work for this gal. Her name is, her real name is Peggy Rockefeller. And so of the Rockefeller family, my dad and I used to do restoration on their ranches out in Southwest Montana. And she's a philanthropist, and I was influenced by enough people that I would, or even through the podcast where I'd hear about them being philanthropists. I just saw how rewarding it was, just for personal satisfaction and how positive it can be for just everybody involved if it's a good and well-run nonprofit. And so it was, it all fell into place. And I've been running it for 3 years. We have two other sites identified to expand it.
Wow.
And it's been very exciting. So that's the idea behind the nonprofit.
Well, and what a great example for your kids to be able to see that you can bootstrap and start your own business. You can also find ways out of negative situations and turn them into positives, whether that means you're teaching the course that you need people to understand so that you can hire them to where food comes from. You know, and being able to start a nonprofit and learning that side, because nonprofits are also businesses, even though people don't necessarily think of them that way. And so they're getting such a great education from you. What is the one thing this year, perhaps, that you'd like to leave your kids with? Because we talked a little bit about one of your themes is flow state. I'd love to hear, what are your other themes for this year? And what do you hope to impart on your kids through everything that you do?
How important it is to just be disciplined, but not in a kind of way where it's like, remove the negative connotations with discipline, right? How important it is to have a discipline and a routine. And you asked a question that I didn't answer earlier. Now I feel like I'll answer it. And that is through that discipline and that routine, you said, how do you do all these things? It's about carving time. That's what the discipline and the freedom is, right? So like I used to say, people would ask me this question that you asked, and I said, I would say, I schedule everything. And I felt like that was a negative, there was too much negative connotations with that word. So then I changed it to, I make appointments. I make appointments, personal appointments, I make professional appointments. I make appointments for people I love, people I want to be with, people I'd be.
Nice.
And then I block out time where I don't want to deal with that person or whatever, like, you know, and mark myself busy, and then carve out that time for flow states and creativity and doing all the things that I do that make me happy and prosperous and successful and everything like that. So that's really the key, is I hope to impart on them. And my daughter is starting. I think my son is starting. He's 19 and she's 15, or soon to be 15. And I'm like, you guys, I want to dispel the myth that they've had in the past couple of years. Like, you just want to control everything you can do. No. I just want to point you towards the North Star, right? The North Star of being, if you just live a life of routine, you know, discipline, making appointments, carving out the time, that will allow you to be more free. And for me to have to worry about that stuff less and less and less, I want to delegate. I go, guys, I am too busy to micromanage you. I don't want that, actually.
Okay.
I am just trying to point you towards the North Star. Please, you know, and I show them and I go like, guys, like, how much more proof do I have to show you that this works? Look at all the stuff Dad's doing. And like, he still has time to go take Kaya, you know, before Christmas to the Godzilla movie on a Saturday night and stuff like that. So
nice. I have a 15-year-old daughter as well. And I'm like, this is going to be a good episode for her to listen to.
Cool.
So, and I think it also gives me insight into how her father parents her versus how I parent her. So, you know, what I love about my format is that we often talk about your brands and businesses and a lot of business things, but there's so much of life that we have to deal with, especially as entrepreneurs. So knowing how to weave them in together, I think is really important for the audience to understand as they're in their businesses, and also it's fun for me to be able to talk about and learn from my guests. So I appreciate that. And I appreciate everything you've shared with us today. Lance, I know I mentioned at the beginning we were going to talk about your last name, because by the spelling, you would not think that pronunciation. So I'd love to hear, what is the origin story for your name? And
it's pretty silly because it's just like you're the classic, hey, wet off the boat immigrant who came to America where they are don't speak English, but they want to Americanize. And so the it's a Czechoslovakian name, and it was originally spelled and pronounced exactly like it's pronounced, Chudaiko.
Yeah.
And so they got to Ellis Island, and they go, oh, we want to Americanize it. Oh, okay. I guess we're going to try to spell it C-A-Y-K-O. And then the folks who, they said, oh, yeah, and then we want to make it sound American, too. So psycho, they thought, was a good idea.
Oh, no.
And so that's the origin story of it. I've always leaned into it because my dad actually, he led by example with the name in a positive way, because he just would lean into it. You could tell. I was like, ooh, this is a perfect icebreaker. Well, I mean, I give people a laugh, then they loosen up. And then it's like, even though it, like, that word means is negative, somehow it's positive every time because he cracked the smile and everything like that. I even carried it into college. And so, like, when I got to North Dakota State, those are the biggest classes I'd ever been in my life, right? So 350 people. And I always thought it was a good idea to try to know people as personal as possible. Because you just never know how connections can go later on. Yeah. And how do you stand up from the crowd? And so I would always go and introduce myself to the professors on the first day. Hey, my name is Lance Psycho. And they would never forget it.
Yeah. I'm sure. Fantastic. Well, this has been a lot of fun. I'm really excited for everything people will learn from listening to this episode and to get on the road for their 2024. Is there any last piece of advice you'd like to give to anybody who's listening, whether they are creative, who's starting their business, whether they're 5 or 10 years in and still struggling and trying to figure out how to get into their flow state?
Consistency is key. That's one of the principles we live by at all the companies we start and try to maintain and then grow and all that good stuff. It's like, consistency is key. You have to, like, for me, I just got back into, I used to do push-ups every other day for like several years, where I would get very good at them, where I could do like 70, 80 in a row. It was awesome. And I felt really strong, felt good. And even I fall short. Everybody falls short. And so you just got to get back into it. I've gotten back into it this year. So I would encourage everybody, really be consistent. That's the key to success.
Fantastic. And Lance, do you have a favorite quote, mantra, verse, family motto that you live by?
Honestly, it's yay. Having money isn't everything, not having it is. You got to recognize that, right? I love my mom and dad emphasize the having money isn't everything. I get that. But they miss the second half of that. And the second half of that is so important. You can't just have this black or white look at the whole thing, and that includes life. The truth is usually somewhere buried in the gray area.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being on Your Brand Amplified. I've appreciated our conversation. It's been a lot of fun. Great way to start the day for me. It is a little earlier here than where you are. And thank you to the audience for coming back and watching or listening to this episode of Your Brand Amplified with Lance Psycho. And Lance, we'll also make sure people know how to follow your podcast and give it a listen. And to that point, for both of us, audience, please leave us a review and a rating. It helps us under our podcast journeys immensely. And it also helps us get in front of more people who want to listen to our great content. I'll be back again in a few days with another amazing expert to share their story. Until then, have a great week. Want more?
check out amplifywithannika.com or follow me on socials at amplifywithannika.
As we close out today's episode, I want to thank Simplified again for making it possible. For all marketers and creators out there, Simplified is your ally in effortlessly crafting on-brand content with a design and video AI. Discover how AI can enhance your creative process at simplify.com. Start for free and elevate your content game. Thanks for listening, and here's to your next creative breakthrough.